Welcome to Cultimatum, the podcast that delves deep into the culture of complexities of cults and human trafficking. I'm your host, Anonymous Andrew. Each week, we explore different facets of cult life and human trafficking, from the psychological manipulation to the brave stories of those who have escaped.
Hello, everyone. I'm Melody. I'm Andrew's co-host. Having experienced the depth of a cult firsthand, specifically the House of Yahweh, I'm here as an advocate for fellow survivors. My journey has inspired me to help others who find themselves in similar situations. This podcast is committed to respecting our guests' privacy to ensure their comfort and safety. We offer them the option to remain anonymous.
Additionally, we would like to include a disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by our hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Cultimatum or its affiliates. Cultimatum is not responsible and does not verify for accuracy any of the information shared by our hosts and guests. The content discussed on this podcast is based on personal experiences, opinions, and speculation, and should not be construed as professional services or advice. Neither the host nor the guest are assuming liability for any misuse or reliance on the information presented. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and listeners are encouraged to conduct their own research and seek professional advice where appropriate.
Before we dive into today's episode, we want to issue a trigger warning. Some episodes may explore explicit and potentially disturbing topics such as sexual abuse, rape, human trafficking, suicide, and other sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Cultimatum, the culture of cults. My name is Anonymous Andrew, and with me today is Melody. Hello, Melody.
Hi, Andrew. We have a special guest with us today. Her name is Brooke Walker. Brooke was a member of the Church of Immortal Consciousness, which she believes is a cult. And from what I've heard so far, I believe so too. And Brooke also has a podcast about her experience called How to Leave a Cult. Brooke, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Melody. Thank you, Andrew. Glad to be here today.
Yeah, thank you. And by the way, I think that's a great title. I'm almost jealous we didn't think about that, because it's kind of like what we do is, like, you know, we tell cult stories and we try to help people get out of cults. But how to leave a cult? Wow, that's just like, that's like a billboard, you know? So tell us about your story and how you, and then ultimately how you started the podcast, wherever you like to start.
Okay. So my family, and at the time it was my parents and my older sister and my younger brother, and my mom was pregnant, moved to Arizona to join a quote community. And, you know, my parents had met Trina and Stephen Camp, who are the ones who started it. And it's not really in existence so much. I don't believe it's in existence anymore today because she's passed away, but she was a medium. So she actually tranced a spirit, but they were going around and they were doing workshops where they would work with couples on relationships and marriage stuff. And then she would trance. And so they were traveling around the country doing those. And so my parents had been involved with them through that over the years. And then they decided that they wanted to be closer to them and decided to move out to Arizona to do that. And I think that it had all the things that people want to see. It was a community. It was raising families together. And I don't think until people get in them, the other things start to hit of what the cost of that is.
Very common.
Yep. And, you know, so as a kid, it wasn't my experience of joining something. It was my experience of being raised in this environment with a lot of other kids. We were living multiple families in a house, two or three at least. And it became incredibly controlling. Maybe it was always controlling. I don't know. It's hard to say. But it was all about the things that we were supposed to do as kids to be better than our parents and to be godly. And so it was, marriages were put together based on who the spirit said you were supposed to be with. So there was arranged marriages. There was incredible alcoholism. So, and I think that one's unusual because I don't think that goes along with a lot of cults, but I think that was kind of part of their draw was like, no, we hang out and we're fun. We're like normal people. So I think there was I think there was something about that that was attractive, like that they were more open in that way. They were very heavy on monogamous relationships. It was very emotionally abusive. It was somewhat physically abusive. I was there for, I mean, I got out somewhere in my mid-30s. So I've been out now for 10 years. I was in an arranged marriage. I had two children with that man before he left because it was a cult and he got out because of that. And so he left me and left my kids. And then, you know, by then, and there was an expectation too at a very young age that that's what you do. You get in a relationship, you get married and you have children. So me and him got together when I was 17 years old. So by the time I'm 21, I've had my second baby. And by the time I'm 22, he's left. So now I have nothing more than a GED. I have two children and it's just, you're so much more entrenched. Now, not that I was in the mindset to try to get out, but I had no resources by then.
Let me just jump in here. We hear a lot of cult stories about if you try to leave, they're going to tell you that you're going to burn in hell, you're going to die of a horrible death. Did they make it difficult for you to leave or give you the mindset or controlling that leaving is a bad idea?
Yeah, so theirs was on the side of what we have here is very unique. And also, this is the most direct connection to God you can have, right? Because everybody's God is the best, right?
Right.
So, I mean, it's what they all act like.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. It's just amazing to me that everybody's religion has the better God.
Yes, they're all the one true truth.
All of them are the true one.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it was that this was the most direct connection you could get to God because she tranced a spirit. So the idea was that spirit was giving us a very direct connection. And if we left, we would lose that. And so it wasn't hell in the sense that that was not one of the beliefs. The belief was that there wasn't any hell, that there was reincarnation. And basically, if you fuck that up and you were to, then you would have many more lifetimes you'd have to come back. So the whole thing is you want to finish it this time so that you can go and be with God and not have to come back and be here again. But if you mess up too much, you're going to have to come back again. So why don't you make this your last? So it was their own version to me of hell. I think it's the same. It's just in a different path.
Slightly different. Yeah.
Okay. When I listened to your podcast and I was able to squeeze in, I think, three episodes. What was she, a medium? And she, you know, so I'm into tarot cards, so I have a little bit of background in that. Mediums are empaths that will be able to channel like the dead. So like people go to psychics and they can say, can you talk to my Uncle Charlie or my mom and my dad or my whatever? Except in this case, she was able to channel God.
So he wasn't a god. He was specifically a spirit that was alive hundreds of years ago. And he was supposedly an English doctor at that time.
Dr. Durant.
So supposedly she had a relationship with him that she would let him come speak through her.
Oh, so it was Dr. Durant. She was.
Yeah. So she would actually, when we would go to a trance, they would turn out all the lights because that's considered harder on the body to have the lights on. So they would turn out all the lights and black out the room as much as possible. And then we would all sing. And then the spirit would come through her and speak and would start out with a sermon and then would open up for questions to everybody.
I have to ask. So was this like a seance atmosphere?
No, not in that way, because it wasn't that spooky. It was much more everybody kind of knew each other type of thing. And it was a weekly thing. So We considered it our version of going to church every week.
Okay. When she spoke, so she connected to Dr. Durant is who she connected to?
Mm-hmm.
Did she, I'm only, again, I watched too many movies maybe.
You're did fine. Her, you did and her, everyone else.
Did her voice change?
Yes.
Oh, it did. Okay. So did she take on a male's voice or
it was kind of deep and gravelly, but it was consistent. I will say it was consistent.
Melody has a question.
Yeah. Yes. Do you think that this was real or do you think she was full of shit and faking it the whole time?
So, okay. I think a combination of both. Let me explain my answer. So number one, she was trained by a man named Richard Ireland, who was very well known and very famous. And he was considered, I believe, what's called a phenomenon medium. And he could read the serial number off of a bill out of your pocket with a blindfold on.
For real?
For real. For real. He would do things like blindfold billets and all kinds of stuff in his stuff. But then he would give spiritual advice too. So this is the man that had trained her. Now, there were definitely incidents over the years that were compelling, that there was some legitimacy to what she did. Now, one of them being, and I talk about some of this in my podcast, is that my parents had given a child up for adoption when my parents had been together since they were teenagers, and my mom got pregnant and they had a baby, and my grandparents basically were like, yeah, you guys are never going to stay together, so there's no reason to keep this baby and you need to give it up for adoption. So they did. It was a closed adoption back then. So when they got to the cult, at one point they began looking for her, the baby that they had given up. And so through that, they were talking to Dr. Duran about it one time and asked him if he could help them find her. And he said to them, and this was over 30 years ago, he said, look for John Black. Now, didn't mean a whole lot at the time. They did end up finding her. They went through an illegal company. We're actually pretty close now, but she also has parents and stuff like that. But we've connected. We ran a half Ironman last year together with me and my sister and my boyfriend did. But at the time, once we found her, we found out John Black is actually her grandfather.
Okay.
So there was moments of very specific information that there's no way to know. Now, what I would say though, is that I think it got worse over the years. And I think that was alcoholically based because there was a ton of drinking and she was definitely a major alcoholic. And she always said that that's what you had to be the kind of trance medium she was, is you had to be an alcoholic.
Did she drink during the sessions?
No.
No. Okay. So what differentiates this? So again, I have a little background in mediums and empaths, and tarot card readers are sometimes empaths, but we're not psychics.
Sure.
But I have been to psychics and, you know, some of them are completely bullshit and they're fake and they're after your money. And I do believe that there are some real psychics out there that have the ability. What differentiates this from just being a psychic from a church, or it wasn't a church? It was a community. You called it a community earlier.
It was a church.
Was there a church building?
Not exactly. I mean, they were always, one of the things is nobody ever gave enough money to build the church building. So even though people were shelling out money left and right, it was never enough to build the church. So that was an ongoing thing.
You brought up some things in the beginning. There was manipulation or control, but you did say something about emotional abuse.
So one of the things that differentiated them that they did was they did something called the process. And the way that this was sold to people was that we're going to help get your negative stuff out of the way so that you can be more clear and have better relationships with the people around you, which really sounds great in theory. But they had a background, if you're familiar with it, like EST and Psi seminars, those types of, which other people have called cults, those, and Landmark Forum now, I think is what it currently runs at. But those are like weekend long seminars where they break you down and break down your, they use the term rackets. So Stephen had a background in all of that. And that was one of the things they would do is they would do this thing called the process where they would sit everybody down, church members. And it was a combination, you know, sometimes it would be as many people as they could, except for whoever needed to be babysitting children. And these could go on for 3 hours. This could go on for 8 hours. You know, there was times that they would go, they would be day long, and then they would roll into the second day. And they would start around a general subject. And then there was no ending until they had fully gone around the entire room. And they would find ways to break down people. And they were incredibly emotionally abusive. There was yelling, there was drinking, there was smoking. And, you know, if you were on the hot seat in one of those, and everybody at one point or another had to be on the hot seat, not that there was a literal hot seat, I just mean in general, as they went around the room, you probably didn't leave without crying. And there's a lot of people who occasionally were at the form of physical abuse in those as well, if you made them do it. You know what I mean? I mean, it was never, we're not physically abusive, but if you push us to a point, you know, then that's kind of what happens.
Make the leap for me from this medium where she would reach out to Dr. Durant and talk about his words in the deeper voice. I'm just a little confused. You said there was God, so it was a church. At what point was the Bible ever there? Was it, what kind of church was it?
It was based on Durant's teachings.
Okay. So was it Christianity based? Was it Jewish based? Was it?
They considered themselves non-denominational. They were not particularly, I mean, they brought in pieces from a lot of different faiths.
Yeah. Yeah. We've heard that every cult does that. It's like they, and I make the joke, Chinese menu, take two from A, two from B on the menu. Sure.
Well, even more so, because like her sister was also a trance medium. So she would trance a different spirit too. And her sister was a Hindu devotee and worship. And so she followed the Sai Baba at the time. And so one of those traditions was doing bhajans. And bhajans is, I mean, I think the only people who would know what this is would probably have to have generally an Indian background. But it's a getting together and singing of these particular songs, which are all bhajan songs. And that was something that was practiced for a long time as well. Not the entire time I was there, but there were years that we had to go to bhajans once a week. So when I say they pulled on a lot of different stuff, there was a lot.
Do you think that even if some of her psychic abilities and her medium abilities were real, let's say some of those were real, do you think she abused that power and used that to manipulate and control the group and the it went to her head kind of thing? Or
yes.
Okay.
That's exactly what I think.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. Because so you think the power was real, but you think she abused it?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of things I can't explain, and that's just the most logical reason that I can come up with.
Wow.
And there was a lot of manipulation towards money. So many of the members had parents that were very financially well off. And after leaving there, we found out that there had been multiple times that people who had left before us had heard about them trying to get to my parents, trying to get to my grandparents' inheritance whenever it was they were going to pass away, and trying to get some of that from my parents.
Okay. I'm hoping that didn't happen.
No, luckily. Okay.
But cool. I'm not surprised because one of the, again, common denominator across a lot of cults is the source of income. you know. Yeah. So whether it's a tide, whether it's free child labor or adult labor, where you worked on the community for free, it was all about giving back what you earned, either 10% or 20%, or sometimes your entire, depending on the cult, your entire paycheck. Or if you worked for them, you didn't get paid at all, but you worked 10-hour days. So you left 10 years ago. What was the final straw for you?
There were so many. I think that, I don't know if this is pretty normal for people, but usually it's not like one thing. Even from beginning, growing up as a kid, not to make this a really long answer, but it's going to be a really long answer. But like growing up as a kid, the way that things were sold to me was, the reason that you're going to do this is because you're going to not have to go through what your parents went through. You're going to be in the relationship we tell you to be in, and doing this stuff is going to make your life easier and closer to God and all this different stuff. And it was like, so we were being molded into that idea. And so then I marry who I'm told I'm supposed to be in a relationship. And they use the word like vibration, which to me, same as any other version you want to call it, as far as like twin flame or whatever label you want to stick on it.
Yeah.
So we get married, we have two kids, and then it didn't work out. So initially he leaves and divorces me, and everybody tells me, because he says, I can't do this anymore and I can't be here anymore. And it was always tumultuous. Me and him were not the best match by any means anyway, but.
Well, it was an arranged marriage. So no, well, you're not.
Right.
No.
Shocking. Shocking.
Yeah, huh? Yeah.
Well, the only thing you have to have in common to get married in a cult is that you're both in the cult, right? That's the only requirement, really.
Yes.
When he decided to leave, did he say to you, come with me, or he was not interested in the marriage anymore?
He was interested, but he was running for his life, is the way that I would put it.
Really? And
because we had had a big fight, and I told him, and so we were, and this is what he had said to me. He said, I can't be here anymore, and I can't do these people anymore. And he had not been there from childhood like I had. He had only been there for a few years. And so I had said to him, I said, well, I need to go talk to one of the ministers. And he said, I can't wait for you. Like, I'm not waiting for you to do that. Which I understand now. Now I'm like, of course, because that would have been the nail in the coffin for him that he might not be able to get out.
Right.
So at the time, in my mind, I was like, well, there's no reason. There's no way we can go together. Like, I literally went into a financial panic. He made great money for her. He could have completely supported us, but I didn't know that because I had no financial concept at the time. And we would have been okay. But, and I don't regret not going with him either, except for that I regret not leaving the cult a lot earlier, like if I could have made a different choice about it. So he basically, at that point, got in his car and drove away. And
that never looked back.
Other than the fact that he left his kids behind. Yeah, yeah. There was, you know.
So speaking of that, so that was 10 years ago. Or maybe longer, because you left 10 years ago. He left
5 years. That was like 25 years ago.
Wow. Okay. So is he involved with the children's life today, or was he growing as they grew up?
He was not, for the most part. He always paid, give him, you know, total respect. He did pay child support for the most part. I mean, he always caught up even when he wasn't, but you know, he ended up there because he had his own background, right? So you don't end up in that place if you got all your shit together, unfortunately,
right.
Usually. Like there's something that keeps you in those kinds of places. And so for the most part, I started dragging him back in towards when I began to get out and my kids were teenagers, and we were going through hell because they were rebellious, and I had the cops at my house on a regular basis. They're adults now. I've got my son's 26, my daughter's 24. They are doing amazing and have a great head on their shoulders.
Good for them. Good for you and good for them.
Yeah. Let me start with that. Like, they're doing amazing. But he began getting involved in that time, and it was very devastating for both of my children initially, because they were so hurt about the amount of time he wasn't in their lives.
Yeah. Well, and that's natural in or out of a cult. When a mom and dad split up, yeah, it's natural for the children to be affected tremendously. So you were in this cult, you said, for the first 25 years. So were you basically born into this cult, I think you said?
I was 8 when we moved to it.
Okay. He joined at what age?
19.
Oh, wow. What a difference. Yeah. So, and stayed for approximately how long?
So 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. Wow. So I could see how, when it was time for him to leave, because you were ground, that's all you knew, basically. Yeah.
And he had come in because his brother married my friend, and his brother had left, but his brother had come in because his brother was a bodyguard, and they hired a bunch of bodyguards because things had gotten so tumultuous with the community around us, which was outside of Payson, Arizona at the time.
Explain that. Why this is the first that I'm hearing a cult needed bodyguards, unless Melody, you've heard of that, but so why did the community feel they needed bodyguards?
My leader had bodyguards around him all the time. They were members of the church and they were volunteering at the time, but he was paranoid and always thought everybody was after him. So it isn't all that uncommon. Okay. Yeah, exactly. It isn't all that. Okay. I don't wonder why, but yeah, exactly.
So we were in a small town, Payson, little bit of a hick town at the time specifically. And rumors begin spreading because of the trans scene, because of the sister who also had pictures of Sai Baba everywhere. So rumors began spreading that we were worshiping a black man. Rumors began spreading that we were devil worshipers, that we were selling children, that we were all sleeping with the same person and then selling children, that we would dance around fires naked. And part of that was because Trina and Steven would go to the bar and drink, and they would try to preach to people. So that wasn't helping in the situation, but threats started coming. I think looking back, I would say this, I was very young at the time, but looking back, I think that things could have been handled differently. But they tried to go to the sheriff at the time. The sheriff had a file a mile long on them and wouldn't do anything.
And, of course not.
And partially because they were causing so much animosity in the neighborhood. They were running people out. So, and I say this looking back, that wasn't my perception at the time. Right. And then, so then Waco happens. So when the whole thing happens in Waco, Texas, because that was such a widely, because of the news on that, it became really tumultuous where we lived.
Yeah. Yeah. Waco was a major clusterfuck on both law enforcement and what David Koresh, is that
Branch
his name?
Davidians. Yeah. The Branch Davidians. Yeah.
Branch Davidians. Yeah. You mentioned something and you kind of glazed over it, and I'm just curious. You said they were selling children?
That was one of the accusations.
Oh, okay. Did you see any sexual abuse of minors? Or
no, there was no. You know, I will say there was a handful of people that have been molested over the years, but I think that's just the sense that there's, you know, child molesters are in all places. But
everywhere.
That was never condoned or allowed or anything of that nature. So, no, that was not. But those were all part of rumors that were being spread about us. And then my dad was an attorney. There were, one of the other ministers was an attorney. Another gentleman went to law school to become an attorney. And so this bled into all these different lawsuits. On top of that, they were also getting a charter school. So they had run their own private school for a long time. And then when the charter thing opened up, they decided to become a charter school. There were a bunch of things going on, people running to the charter board to try to block them from getting a charter school, which is how the lawsuit, which is another reason the lawsuit started. But because of the threats and the rumors, that's why they ended up hiring the bodyguards.
What age did you leave?
Gosh, 35-ish, somewhere around there.
All right. So take us through, which we ask all of our guests. So when one leaves a cult, there's that deconstruction and transition into normal life in our society, depending how severity their cult was. You know, the Amish, the Jehovah's Witness, they weren't allowed to watch TV or have cell phone. You know, I don't know. Were you able to have cell phones and watch TV and go to doctors?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
We didn't go to doctors a whole lot, but we had communication, TV. My dad got a newspaper, but that was because it was a him thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, men and their newspapers have been around for a long time.
Yeah. Their thing was in the world, but not of the world. So we can be a part of it, but we need to know that what we have here is sacred and special. So let's not be careful.
So when you left, I also remember hearing on your podcast that you were a paralegal.
Yeah, I was. Okay.
So you had a job. So when you left, was it difficult or you were able to make that transition? You had income?
By the time I got out, which not when I was a paralegal, that was me working for my dad. I hadn't even had a job outside of working for a family-owned business until I was way after having my kids in my 20s. By the time I got out, I had gotten my bachelor's degree. I was working for a doctor, managing a medical office. I had just bought my first home. I had just bought my first home for me and my kids. There had been a lot of separation by then. And there were breakdowns. Breakdowns were becoming a regular thing. More and more disagreements and things were, and my parents kind of, me and my family had broken apart, even though we were all in it. Not that we didn't talk to each other, but it was difficult. I basically started getting out because I had a huge breakdown with the daughter, with the cult leader's daughter. And a lot of it stemmed from stuff with our kids. And she was completely unapproachable as a person and very mean. And she still is from what I know.
So that was one of the catalysts that propelled you to leave?
Yes.
Yeah. So did you leave like your husband? You got in your car and you just drove away?
No. The house that I owned was not... By then I was not in Payson anymore. I was in Mesa and my kids were going to high school. And so by then it wasn't a physical thing. It was just an emotional thing. And it was losing all my relationships and all the people that I had known for my life and my faith. So,
which is common when people leave cults, they leave behind everybody that you again grew up from the age of 8 to 35. That's all you know are these people. And then when you leave, you literally, now I don't know if you do you keep in touch with anybody from there?
That was not even an option.
Okay.
Because as soon as it happened, it was really ugly and it was pretty much full fallout. And it was like everybody else I had seen before, you know, everybody took sides. None of them were on mine, except for the handful of people that had gotten out. There was a handful of people that kind of got out around a similar time. And so those people I still had relationships with, but mutual friends, it's like it just wasn't there anymore.
Yeah.
And the relationship became a one-sided thing where it's like, I could reach out to them, but they never reached out to me. Right. And it just became this thing where it's like, what it helped me begin to ask the questions I needed to ask so that I could heal, which is, what is it? What is a healthy relationship? What is a healthy friendship? What is a healthy relationship with my parents? What is a healthy relationship with my children? What's a healthy relationship with my siblings? What if I could have any relationship I wanted, if I could like write this picture of what that would be, what is that? And I started doing that. And I started thinking about the things that I wanted in my life. And I went to therapy. And a lot of the therapy was just the fact that me and my kids, I mean, I was beside myself because my kids were completely rebelling. And here I am, and I'm telling them that they can never talk to any of the people that they grew up with their entire life. Mm-hmm. And trying to protect them, but also at the same time, like devastated and in utter grief about it myself, because it is everything I knew, because it's not like I've maintained or created all these relationships since I had left. I had a couple people, but these are the people I knew and I grew up with and that, you know, had all the stories and of growing up together and all these different things that you have when you've been and grown up in this environment for your entire life. Right. So on top of that, I'm trying to figure out if that's not what I believe, if that's not my faith anymore, what the fuck do I believe now?
Right.
If that was bullshit, and it doesn't come on like a freight train, it just is like this, it's layers, it's peeling the onion, and it's like little bit at a time. And it's, and I asked myself, and one thing that I felt like I was really good at that's helped me a lot was asking myself questions. And it was things like when my kids were going through stuff, I was parenting the way my parents parented me, which was very cult controlled. Mm-hmm. So as I started going to therapy, I'm like, what do I wish my parents would have done? Because when my parents tried to talk to me, when my mom tried to talk to me about sex, it was all about this, you know, and it was all about this is what the teaching is. And, you know, you only have sex with the person that you're supposed to be in a relationship, and anything outside of that is out of integrity. So I knew I wanted to throw that out the window, but how do I have these conversations with my kids?
Yeah.
And what do I think now to even have this conversation with them? And how do I not be the controlling mother that I was at the time? So I was trying to figure out how to parent because everything I was doing wasn't even working anyway. Kind of. But I mean, like, I had the cops at my door on a regular basis, you know? Because my son's smashing mailboxes and my daughter's smoking pot and getting caught for it. And I mean, normal teenage stuff.
Yeah, I was just going to say normal teenage behavior. Yeah.
But it was also excessive because they were so angry and
yeah,
all the things that kids that age. And, you know, the drinking was so heavy. I share that, you know, I started drinking when I was 12. And so did my kids. Wow. Like that was not that it was okay. It wasn't allowed or anything like that, but that's just what began happening.
Mm. Okay, Brooke, let's, wow. This is more than I expected because listening to a few of your episodes, not understanding this Melody, this is a little bit off the beaten path for us as far as cults.
Oh, it is. Definitely.
I just find it. Yeah. I find it fascinating. Brooke,
it is unique.
So you have a podcast and it's called How to Leave a Cult. So let's talk about that. How do you leave a cult? and I know that's not a one question answer. So, but you started this podcast because I would imagine there are you like Melody and like us want to help people who are baffled on how to get out of these cults, organizations that are mind controlling.
Yeah. You know, the name kind of sums up what I wanted the podcast to be. So it really is my biography. And I felt like it was important to tell my story because there were so many unique factors in it. And I want people to understand why people actually get into cults.
Right.
And I want people to understand that getting out of the cult isn't just removing yourself from it. So my goal with the podcast is that people could understand better so that they and have a place that they could use as a resource to understand what religious abuse looks like so that they can begin the healing process so that it's not something that they carry for the rest of their life.
Right.
Because I found that so many people don't want to talk about it. I have people come up to me all the time when they see that I'm doing it because they've seen it somewhere and they know me and they're like, wow, yeah, I had some kind of something similar in my childhood too, some type of controlling abuse through religious means. And it's really common. And, you know, we need to find an avenue to help people heal from this so that they can figure out what they want to hold dear spiritually. That's really what it means to me, is what do you want to hold dear spiritually, regardless of what's been used to manipulate?
Look, we got to take it a step further. I mean, while you need to continue your journey and doing what you're doing, and Melody, here it comes, we as a society need to do more to stop these cults, these organizations, because when I started, when we started this podcast just earlier this year, I started to investigate the Twin Flames only because I saw the documentary and somebody introduced me to the Twin Flames. And I was just appalled by what I was seeing. And, the Twin Flames, they may call themselves a religious cult, but they're not. They're just a scam. They're a bunch of fraud artists who fraud you out of your money to tell you that we can find you a Twin Flame. J.W., La Luz del Mundo, the Mormons, the IFBs. God, we've done 25 different episodes
House
up to
of
this
Yahweh.
Point. All of these cults, House of Yahweh, all of these I rant about how law enforcement is not, and you talked about the law enforcement in your town couldn't handle what was going on, or they. It's got to be stopped, and I don't know how it's going to happen, but your podcast, our podcast, blogs, websites, documentaries, hopefully in the next 10, 15, 20 years, cults will start to... Your cult's gone, right? They're no longer...
Yeah, I mean, the woman who was the main medium, she passed away, so...
And nobody... So that's it, right? It died with her.
I believe so. I mean, her kids are still running around wreaking havoc and pissing people off because I get contacted occasionally from people who ask me for help in regards to family members that get involved with them. But the overall teaching and all of that kind of stuff is not in existence from at least Duran not having somebody to talk to, I think pretty much messed that up, but I don't know.
Okay. Let's begin to wrap up. I'm fascinated by this story, and I want to thank. Let's just give a shout out to Kelly. Kelly Adolphson put us together.
Yes.
Thank you, Kelly. Any wisdom, parting thoughts, something that you've learned from doing your podcast that you can help? So our audience, our demographic, are people who either have just left a cult or maybe thinking of leaving cults. Any words of wisdom to them? How to get out, what to do once, because like you said, and Melody and all of our guests, once you get out, it's a whole new world out there for them. So any thoughts, any wisdom, any advice?
I mean, it's incredibly worth it. There's a lot of people who've been through what you've been through, and you know, it's worth it to start the healing process, whatever that means to you. Get help wherever it feels best for you at the time. I mean, sure. That could be, I mean, I teach a lot of different things like meditation and stuff like that, but I couldn't initially. So I think you have to go with what works for you, because initially I would have never gone and meditated because I was told to meditate in my church. And that was I had a real problem with it. because the way that I was told to do it was very dysfunctional. So if you just have to find your first baby step towards whatever feels good. And okay. So if that's getting some help from a therapist, I mean, I've done EMDR.
Me too. Yeah. EMDR is great.
You know, I know people who've done ketamine therapies. I know people who do Reiki. I know, like, take the baby step in whatever you feel comfortable in doing that doesn't trigger you, because some of it, you know, initially it's hard to not throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like, there are often good things you were around that got twisted in what you were in. So trying to get back around to them can be difficult, but it's very worth it in the long run.
You know, every time I hear that phrase, throw the baby out with the bathwater, I get a visual of the baby being thrown out. That's my twisted mind. But I sometimes hear these phrases and I wonder where they come from. Where, do you have a website? Do you have a blog? Do you have a newsletter? Where are you on social media? Tell us all where we can find you.
I am on all the social medias. You can find me on YouTube. I think my channel is actually my name, Brooke Walker with something. But if you look up on YouTube, How to Leave a Cult podcast, you can find me there. My podcast, you can find everywhere. So it's on Apple, Spotify, Audible. So yeah, you can find it in all the places. And then I am on TikTok, How to Leave a Cult. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook, How to Leave a Cult.
Really? Good. We'll follow you.
Okay. Yeah.
We're big on Facebook, so we'll follow you. And we run a couple cult groups. So maybe if you'd like to join, just be part of our.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We have our own group, a Cultimate Podcast group. Melody, what is the name of your Facebook group?
It's called Cult Escape and Recovery on Facebook. It's a support group for ex-cult members.
I always get the words twisted. Cult and Recovery Support Group, which is something she started after she left. And we're trying to build a community of cult survivors. So love to have you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and just to the audience, if you Google Brooke, which I did, a lot comes up. Like, you come up everywhere. You've been busy. So,
well, I have a business that has nothing to do with this. So,
okay, yeah. All right. Although, but when I did put your name in there, and I put your name in there, and how to leave a cult, I did get a lot of results. So,
a lot of them are me, because I've done a lot of stuff, but.
Good.
And we will have all those links in our show notes for the audience. I will put those in the show notes so that people can find you.
Yeah, Melody will reach out to you and get all the social media links and anything else that you'd like us to promote. And do you ever think of writing a book?
Yes. And I decided that the podcast was first because it was too much to figure out how to stick in a book.
Yeah. Okay.
There you go. Yeah. That's fair.
I get it. I get it.
How I Met Kelly.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. For the audience, Kelly is a guest I had on the Anonymous Andrew podcast, and she recommended that we interview Brooke. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Brooke, for coming on the show and sharing your story with us. We really appreciate it. And if anybody wants to hear more of Brooke's story, you can find a lot more detail on her podcast. She goes into a lot more detail about her story. This is the short version.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
Yeah, Brooke, thank you so much for joining us. And maybe we'll talk again soon.
Perfect. Yes. Sounds good.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Once again, we want to thank Brooke so much for coming on the show and sharing her super unique story. Very interesting cult story. Andrew, I have a couple things that I wanted to mention. First of all, in the interview, you asked her what was the straw that broke the camel's back. And she had said it wasn't just one thing. And I had heard an analogy before of another ex-member of my cult. And I loved the analogy and I'm going to use it. And I didn't get an opportunity to say it during the interview, but he used the analogy that what happens with your faith when you're in a group like that is he likened it to a plate. And he said, and every time something happens that you don't agree with or you think is wrong or you know is wrong, your plate gets a little crack in it. And every time something else happens, you get another crack in it. And all these things start adding up. And eventually your plate shatters and it's in pieces.
Right.
And so it's not one, just one little thing. Because remember, she said it's not one thing that broke the straw that broke the camel's back. She said it was so many things. And I remembered that analogy of that other member of my cult. And I was like, I'm going to use that because I thought it was a really good analogy, because it is very true to how you end up leaving is it's a lot of little things usually build up. Sometimes there is one big catalyst at the end, but everybody's story is unique. The other thing I wanted to touch on was about, did you want to say something about that, Andrew, before I move on?
I do, but go ahead, go to your next topic and then I'll jump in.
And then we were talking about too, about what we can do in law enforcement. And we talk about this all the time, but I think the biggest thing that we can do as individuals is do exactly what we're doing, bringing awareness and educating people, teaching people to learn what a cult is, what are the signs to look for so that they don't join to begin with. I think that is the best we can do as individuals to try to help with preventing some of these groups from damaging people's lives, is to educate people.
When I started my podcast, I had this mentality. First of all, I had the victim mentality because I felt like a victim. And then through therapy and many of my guests, they said, you have to change that mindset. So I ultimately I did. I didn't look at myself as a victim anymore. And, you know, I've come so far from there. But doing this podcast, I try sometimes listening to, again, the human trafficker we had on a couple of nights ago that hasn't aired yet, but I try to put myself in her shoes or his shoes.
Yes.
And I can't, because whether you're coming out of a cult or you're coming out of a human trafficking, I will never know ever what that's like. Now I can tell if it was an alcoholic telling their story, if it was somebody who was gaslit, or
Right.
I'm responsible for the life that I created for myself. And for 30 something years, it was horrible. I wasted so many years. And that's my problem. I just can't imagine what these poor people have gone through. And some of them are when they were children, all the way up to 18, or some of them didn't get out till 25, 30. And it's just heartbreaking to me. And I'll never be able to, which is why you're here, because you can kind of balance it out. Not the only reason you're here, but you know, I asked you to come on because I'll never understand what it was like. And even though I have empathy and I can identify with people and on various levels of grief or trauma, it's difficult
to relate.
Just listening to some of these stories, my skin crawls. So that's all I wanted to say on that.
So, Andrew, I will just add on there that I can't fully relate to your story either, except for that my dad was an alcoholic. So I went through alcoholism on the other side of it. And my cult played a part in my dad's alcoholism, which is also triggering. So it's meaning that my dad actually had been sober for 11 years when we joined the cult. And they told him that there was no such thing as an alcoholic and that there's no reason he can't drink. And he went off the wagon and started drinking. And then he was on and off wagon until he literally drank himself to death. So So I there is part of me that blames the cult and the cult teachings for my dad's death.
Sure. Because
they didn't treat his disease as for what it was. And they didn't recognize it.
And he had a support system in place that was working 11 years sober.
Yes.
I would imagine you can attribute that to the 12 steps that he was in, but he chose that a new path, a new chapter in his life. And then he goes to a cult and they say, hogwash. There's no such thing as alcoholism. Really?
Yeah.
That's like saying there's no such thing as pedophilia, but yet you're doing it, you know?
Right.
Don't get me started.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. I just before I forget, I'd like to thank Kelly Adolson, who has been a guest on my show twice, and she's a life coach, and she's got some other things going on, and she's the one that recommended Brooke to come on our show. So I just want to give a shout out to Kelly Adolphson for bringing Brooke to our attention.
Yes, we do appreciate it, because Brooke had a really unique story, and we really enjoyed speaking with her.
Yeah, we would never have found her if it wasn't for Kelly, because
for sure.
We're finding many of our guests on the Facebook end of all the groups that we belong to, and
yes.
And you've been doing your great job I'm not using this word negatively, but trolling on TikTok and Instagram looking for...
Recruiting. Yeah. Recruiting.
Thank you. Recruiting. And we've had some great guests, but it's good to get somebody that we've never met and is not part of our little support group. And yeah. You know, as the podcast grows, I'm sure we'll get a lot more. So
for sure. So once again, thank you so much to Brooke for coming on the show, and thank you to Kelly for recommending her, and thank you to all of you for tuning in to Cultimatum. Your support, as always, is greatly appreciated. Please take a moment to rate and review our podcast on platforms such as Apple and Spotify, especially Apple. We could use your reviews on there. You can't really rate on Spotify, so if you could review us on Apple, we would appreciate that. And don't forget to follow, share, and keep listening to all of our latest episodes.
And I'll just put a footnote there. You can't leave a review on Spotify, but you can leave stars, right?
Yes.
You can leave five stars or four stars, whatever.
Yeah. You can rate, but not review. Correct.
So that helps, because the way I understand how it works, if you go in and type in, I want to find a podcast about cults, it's going to find the one that's got the most rating. Like, so if it's got five stars, it's going to show you that first. So
yes. So still rate us.
We need stars.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, please. You can also show your support by joining our Facebook group under the name Cultimatum Podcast. So just go to Facebook, type in Cultimatum Podcast, and you can join.
And you can also find us on additional social media platforms, including Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok, and also YouTube.
If you have a cult or human trafficking experience you'd like to share with us, please feel free to contact us at cultimatumpodcast@gmail.com.
And ex-cult members looking for any additional support can consider joining the Cult Escape and Recovery Group on Facebook.
If you're interested in hearing, If you're interested in hearing more from me, you can find me on my other podcast, Anonymous Andrew, Life and the Choices We Make. And I'll just say again, season 3 is starting in September. By the time you hear this, it will have already started. But season 3 will be kind of a new path that I'm taking. So come check me out.
Absolutely. And as always, stay safe, stay informed, and remember, you're not alone.